You're listening to episode 351 of the Tennis Files podcast, a Tennis Summit 2024 preview on maximizing your potential, double strategy, and reading the court with Paul Anacone, Louis Caye, and Faisal Hassan.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Tennis Files Podcast, bringing you advice from the top minds in tennis to help you improve your game. And now, here's your host, Mehrban Iranshad.
Hey there, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. And today is a special one because I am gearing up for Tennis Summit 2024, a free online tennis conference that anyone can watch from anywhere in the world with their computer, smartphone, tablet, etc. It's going to be 40 plus sessions with the best coaches on the planet, including Paul Anacone, Louis Caye, Will Hamilton, Scott Baxter, Ian Westerman, Gigi Fernandez, Dr. Mark Kovacs, and the list goes on and on. Really excited to have this 8 iteration of the summit. Really crazy to think about that, you know, just starting it in 2017 and just building it from there. Last year, we got around 10,000 people who joined, which is crazy to think about, but it's pretty cool how far the reach of the internet goes. And so, yeah, really excited for it. If you haven't heard about it, it's going to be from April 22nd to 27th. I actually have a kickoff live stream with my great friend Peter Freeman from Crunchtime Coaching on Sunday night here in Eastern Time. And then the 22nd and 23rd, which Monday and Tuesday, are going to be strategy sessions. So we'll have, like, I think 5 to 6 sessions a day for those. And then Wednesday, Thursday will be technique days. And then Friday will be the mental game day, and finally Saturday will be fitness as well. And we're also gonna have a live stream about tennis gear as well, racket, strings, etc. for you gearheads. And yeah, a bunch of live streams and one session where me and Ryan Reedy will analyze serve clips from the audience. So really cool, really fun, and free as well for you to join and watch the videos for that week. It's obviously going to be opportunity to, you know, get the lifetime access pass if you like, if that works for you. Definitely something good to do if you want to watch the sessions over and over again anytime, which is helpful. But yeah. So I've been working really hard with that on my team. Shout out to my team as well for all the hard work of preparation. So in today's podcast, I figured since the summit is coming up in less than a week, that I would put together this preview video for you to get just a small taste of what the sessions will be like. So we've got preview of 3 summit sessions for this year. The first one is going to be Paul Anacone on maximizing your tennis potential, Louis Caye on double strategy for club level players, and Faisal Hassan on reading the court. I'm sure you know about these three. Paul Anacone coached Roger Federer, Pete Sampras, and many other amazing players, and also was a great player himself. So he did super well on both playing and coaching, and also he's now Paula's commentating very frequently as well. And then Louis Caye has coached, I think, 8 or 9 world number ones at this point, and he's just a master of strategy, and he also has coached a lot of club-level players, too. And then Faisal Hassan, as well, has created a lot of great courses with my friend Will Hamilton from Fuzzy Love Balls, and he has been coaching for many, many years and has, you know, all the certifications you can think of for tennis. So, yeah, really great crew here, and just wanted to put together this preview of those sessions so you can check them out and then hopefully get interested to join Tennis Summit 2024. If you haven't already, at this point we have, I think, at least 4,000 or so who have joined, and we're still a week out. So pretty good, pretty good. All right. Well, without further ado, here are the previews of the summit sessions for you. Please enjoy. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this special session with the legendary Paul Annacone. As I was mentioning to Paul, I always really enjoy our chats on the summit. It's really, really an honor to get, together with Paul and chat a bit about tennis. I mean, I'm sure you've all seen Paul either playing on the tennis court a little while back
they had TVs then.
yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, they or coaching just the most incredible players on the planet, you know, obviously Roger and Pete and now helping with Taylor Fritz, who's doing great as well. And Paul's also consulting for Southern California's Tennis Association there. And, Paul's also, he's done very well, winning 1985 Australian Open doubles title. Paul, year I was born. You still look young, though. I don't.
You gotta start losing the dates on my wins.
That's right. Tell my editor to cut that the year.
That'll be better.
I'm down to do that. But yeah, 3 ATP titles, reached career high ranking of number 12 in singles. But yeah, I'm sure you know all that. So Paul, thank you so much for coming on today to talk about how to maximize your tennis potential. Really appreciate your time.
Sure. No, it's always that. We always have some good conversations. Always look forward to it, and glad we can make it work out.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. Thanks for time in this. So, yeah, I mean, I'll just ask you straight up, the main question that's the title of the presentation, then we'll branch out a bit. But in your mind, and from your experience with all the great champions and also, other players as well, what are some of the keys to maximizing your tennis potential? Obviously, a lot of us here, we feel like we can achieve a lot on the court, but then we feel like maybe something or other that we're not doing properly to really get there. So what do you think we need to do?
Yeah, I think that the most important thing, regardless of your, of your level, is if you're trying to maximize your potential, you kind of have to put things into categories. I was fortunate enough this weekend to go to a Southern Cal junior tennis called CTC Jamboree in Claremont. And we got to talk a little bit about these three categories, which I love, which is your head, your heart, and then your physical talent. And I think those three things are really what make you up as a person and as a player. So regardless of what level you're at, you have to maximize all three categories. Obviously, the physical talent is what we all focus on. And particularly at the club and developmental level, I think we sometimes get distracted because that, to me, is actually the easiest part. That's your stroke production. That's your athletic ability, running, jumping, hand-eye coordination. You can see that. That's pretty tangible. But the other stuff, the other two categories, are actually more important, in my opinion. And one of those is the heart. And by the heart, what I mean by that is your ability to relentlessly compete, your ability to relentlessly try to get better. And a lot of times people say that they are and they will and they do, but they don't. And they get distracted and they get sidetracked. And we get wrapped up in emotion. We get wrapped up in an inability to decipher and problem solve when there's pressure that's going on. And that's really normal at every level, whether you're playing a match with your sister, your brother, your husband, the club championships, or Wimbledon. Pressure's pressure. So everybody feels it. So if you unconditionally compete, then you need to be able to put all that stuff aside and, regardless of what's going on, just try your butt off every point. And that goes to the last category, which is your head. And your head is your ability to think through all that emotion, your ability to kind of problem solve under pressure, to take any kind of adversity that's thrown at you, physical, mental, your opponent's level, wind, bad calls, broken ankle, whatever it may be, and try to figure out how to problem solve so that you can get the most out of yourself at that particular moment. So if you can kind of tick all three of those boxes and be aware of them yourself, and be aware that those boxes are what make you up, not, oh, I just missed, I can't believe I missed my forehand, but why did I miss my forehand? Was it bad footwork? Was it bad mental preparation? Was it bad focus, bad competing? Because I was checked out thinking about that I've got to pick up my kids after school. I've got to pick up my laundry. I forgot to do the dishes because my wife asked me, why did you miss that shot? So the idea is to try to maximize your potential by making sure all those categories are taken care of as you're trying to improve.
Right. Wonderful, Paul. So head, heart, and physical talent, and we focus a bit too much on the physical talent part, which is the easiest. How would a player who, let's say they really struggle with putting forth a lot of effort, like for one reason or another, you know, maybe they're used to giving excuses like, oh, well, you know, I didn't really try this match. And all of a sudden, you know, they're watching this and they say, oh, wow, like now I'm really motivated thanks to Paul's advice here. But what is the next step? Because obviously they can't, you know, in one day turn around and sure, really do that all the time. So what do you think they should be doing?
Well, two words. So one of them is routine and another word is habit. And you want to try to figure out how to create routines that you can constantly rely on to help you sustain concentration. And that ties into the other word, habit, which is make those routines habit. So that every time you feel pressure, every time you kind of get distracted or feel yourself getting sidetracked by things, you get into your routine. And the more you do those routines, the more they become habits and then they're ingrained. Whether it's straightening your strings, going back and toweling off, getting a picture in your mind before your next point, whether it's sitting on your changeover with a towel over your head. Those are just a few things. None of them are right or wrong. They're all different types of routines, but you have to find yours that work. And you think about it. Think about the great players. Think about Novak Djokovic. Picture him as he's about to return serve, how he starts to widen his stance, how he starts to gaze down at the court, how he looks around, gets his hands on his racket, then he comes up and gets his vote. That's a Novak Djokovic routine. Rafa's little quirks of tugging at his pants and his wipe in his eye, that's a routine. Roger Federer, the way he bounces the ball before he used to serve, that's a routine. Other players have different themes, but what they do is they all allow you to hit the reset button. So the idea is to practice those routines so that you can sustain your concentration longer, and so you can sustain your concentration in a more consistent manner. And that's really the crux of it, but it's really hard to do that. So, and don't drive yourself nuts, because it's really hard to concentrate for an entire match. That's why there's breaks between points. So you can detach yourself between points, but then get into one of your routines to hit that reset button. And so setting up these routines and these habits will allow you to more likely be focused and refocused each time you step up to the line to serve or return serve. So practice those two things, routine and create the habit so that it's habit forming.
Yeah, great stuff as usual. Yeah, I remember a talk from Novak that I think was posted widely on social media where he said, you know, there's a misconception that, you know, you just have to be focused all the time, but even he himself, you know, loses concentration, but then the key is to be able to refocus, and through these routines that become habit, then you can do that. So that's fantastic.
Paul, the reset button, reset button, right? Got to be able to hit your reset button, whether you just won a set, lost a set, whether you just got a good call, bad call. Those routines will set you up. And another little catchphrase is a reset button. What's yours and how do you get there?
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. And I know you mentioned, Paul, that the physical talent is actually the easiest part of this equation. But certainly, you know, we see a lot of amateur players, myself included, where we have, you know, problems with getting a stroke down correctly. You know, maybe it's a serve and you're working on some stuff, and then all of a sudden you have, you know, five USTA matches in a week, and then you just revert back after you've practiced a little bit, and it's really painful, which you can tell I've done myself. But what do you think maybe are some just piece of advice that you can give us on the physical talent for those of us who do have some, you know, inefficiencies in our strokes?
Well, we all do. I mean, we all do. And that ties into the answer, which is the big answer is knowing your identity. Your identity as a player. And by that, defining the characteristics that make you a good player and the characteristics that will make you a better player. And what I mean by that is focus on your style of play, what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are, And then set up dynamics so that the goal is really simple. People get carried away and they try to figure out, well, what's my goal? Everyone's goal should be the same thing. How do I finish each point trying to execute what I do best? Whether it's a volley, whether it's a forehand, whether it's a two-handed backhand, whatever it may be, how are you going to finish the point doing what you do best?
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this special session with my favorite French Canadian coach, Louis Caillé, who's been with Great Britain since 2007. He has an incredible resume, and I'm really very grateful and fortunate that Louis comes on the summit. He's been on for several years now, and it's just wonderful every time. Our audience really loves the information that he has for us. And just in case you don't know about Louis, he's coached and mentored at least 8 number one ranked doubles specialists, including Jamie Murray, and 26 players who've reached the ATP top 50. It's actually probably more, at this point. But Louis works in coaching development for the Lawn Tennis Association and has been a Davis Cup and Fed Cup coach and captain for Great Britain since 2007 and Canada, was also with Canada for 12 years. So that's about 25 years in total. In addition to the Davis Cup, Louis is approaching his 7th Olympics. He has coached and mentored a gold medal winning Canadian doubles team. So just a lot of amazing accomplishments. But, you know, even though Louis has done so much for the pros, Louis has also coached a lot of hours. I think we were talking about maybe 20 hours a week at some point for interclub members. So this is going to be great information for, you know, pros and amateurs alike. But we're actually going to focus on the club level game today. So Louis, thank you so much for having us or for being on.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you,
friend. Yeah. Anytime. So yeah. As I mentioned, we're going to get into specifics for club level doubles, which I'm so excited about, Louis. I actually just came back this past weekend from a mixed doubles. They call it combo mixed sectionals tournament. So we traveled to Virginia and our team won it, and it was really fun. And So it was very appropriate to be talking to you a few days later. So yeah, thanks for being here.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. It's nice for me to talk about club doubles, because a lot of time when the pros were asking me, where do you get all that knowledge on doubles? I say, my friend, club members tactic, it's so much more complicated than the pros. But now the nice thing is international doubles now cannot be better for club members. And what I will present is to be sure that the club coaches who may not focus so much on international doubles realize how much the international doubles change and how much that will impact their coaching with club members. So club coaches and club members, stay with us. We're going to bring you to the world of club doubles. So here it is.
Excellent.
So my topic will be like, how international doubles is perfect for club members.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at newbalance.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
So the overview of the presentation, I will give that awareness, like I just mentioned. I'm going to talk about the basic tactics for that. And I will start even the presentation by dealing with the common fears and doubles of the members, being hit by the ball, being lobbed, and being passed in the tramlines. Because I think, and you know, these fears are true also with the professionals. If you don't address these fear quickly, like at the beginning of your season and all that, a lot of things you will do, advanced tactic, will not work as long as you get rid of these fears. So these are some of these fear. So getting hit by the ball, what I do, I have a racket right here. It's instead of showing, and sorry, it will be difficult, but I won't be that long, showing that position of the racket, you know, when they like this, if the ball come at you, you cannot protect yourself. Your wrist is all broken. So I always show to have like a continental grip, which is a tiny bit toward the back end. And as you could see, my racket is not like in front of you like this. So if balls come on me, I protect it. So I start by throwing balls very close to them. They protect their body. Then I back up at the ball progressively hard. And when the ball come on them, they feel they have protect their body. So that removes some fear. Then I say it's the same grip if they come on your back end, which are fine. And for the forehand, it's always easier because the palm of them is behind to deal with it if it comes on their forehand. So that's not a big issue. And even if they miss few forehand volleys, as long as they're not afraid to get it, then they can play a bit more offensive. Second, I explained that when you're at the net, you can be very close to the net, you know, and a bit midway from the net to the service line. So I could say if you play with someone who it's very hard and very wild, doesn't control the shot, you don't have to be close to the net. I say even the pros sometime on second serve return, on first serve, they'll be very close, and on second, they won't close the net as much. So if they do that, you can do the same. So again, some players you may play close. Again, some other players who really attack hard a second serve, you can be a bit further back. And so I address that, and of course, a tiny bit more, but because I cannot demonstrate that much, we'll stick to that. Fear of getting past, especially in tram lines. You will see tram lines is a British word for alleys. It took me 2 years to say tram lines instead of alleys, and now I'm very used to it. So it's a legitimate fear when the ball is easy. So if you're at the net, the ball is easy, protect your tram line. And if they hit beside you, it's going to go to the baseline player who will deal with it, lob back and whatever. But if the ball is difficult, like deep is difficult for club member or a bit fast or a bit jam or whatever, then don't protect the tram line. Go a tiny bit more to the middle for every shot that will be neutral or defensive through the middle that you can put it away. So I give two type of ball, like very easy, they protect the tram line, very difficult, they don't. And the same rule as I put with the professional, I put that with the club members. This is why I brought it to the professional. Do what I tell you when the ball is tough until you get beat three times in the tram line. And then I give you the right to protect your tram line through the rest of the match. And it was not happening because club members are not so good to hit the balls consistently in the tram line, especially not when the ball is difficult. And it's the same with the pros. I have the same rules on the pros to not protect the tram line when they are on offense until they lose the point three times. So finally, I demystified that with some drills and things go well. But it's the way I talk, you know, with confidence, give them a little drill, make them realize it won't happen, that gets it. And the famous fear of getting lobbed, I show them where is the service line. And a lot of people think to cover a lob, they have to go to the baseline. So it makes them completely powerless. I say you just have to cross the service line before the lob was very slow. So I say you can do that. And also when we're at the net, we have close to the net, we have a service line and we have the wall like in between. But it's not a line, it's like a zone. There's the front of the wall to the professional who can back up on a smash. And there's the back of the wall. So for me, for example, at my age, if I play double, I'll be in the back of the wall, which is a tiny bit closer to the service line and to the net, but not that much, just a tiny bit more than half of the service square. And then it appeases me for the fear of getting hit because I don't react as quick as when I was younger. And I know I will cover the lob because the service line is just behind me. And I know if I cross it for the lob, I will never get lobbed. So once I succeed to securize, I don't know if it's an English word, make the players secure about these three fears and give them solution on the positioning movement and also the decision making, when to do it or not. And then when I make them a tiny bit further, like me, I think it's easier for me to move forward quickly on an easy ball to put the ball away than to move backward quickly to cover a lob. So I show them. So I say, now that you're secure, the service line is closed. Let's train like to block the ball steady. And when the ball floats, to run forward to put it away. And that works very well. But anyway, club coaches, you know, your members, my only awareness that I want to tell you, address these three fears if you have a special interclub things. Otherwise, whatever advanced or sophisticated tactics, one of them will not do it if their fear is not removed and that they understand the game better. And they understand that, yes, it's true, you can get it by the ball, so do that. In those situations, yes, it's true, you can get past and then the alleys, but not when this happened, only when this. And it's true, you can get lob. And if you're slow to cross the service line, you can start a tiny bit further. But let's train to move quicker, close to the net when we see a defensive shot or poaching more diagonally instead of laterally.
All right, reading the court. So, Mamba, what I want to focus on is athletes getting used to reading the courts. I'm going to elaborate, but give you the 50,000-foot view, okay? So the goal of today's topic is to break down and identify which areas or area an athlete needs to work on to improve their skill set of reading the court. Reading the court or anticipation, okay? It completes player skill sets. To be a complete player, you need to know what's happening on the court, which is the reading. You need to know what you need to do, which is the planning. And how do I do it, which is the doing. So I like to call it read, plan, do. A lot of athletes focus too much on the doing, the execution part. But I don't want to get into the reading. Okay, so we can talk about reading, planning, and doing. But for today, we're just going to focus on the reading. All right? So the read involves reading the opponent, the ball, and your contact. That's the first thing. Okay. The planning, once you've read, involves your court position and your shot selection. Okay. And your doing, it involves the mechanics of how you hit the ball. Today, I want to spend more time on how to actually train reading. How you hit a ball is based on your planning, but how you plan is based on the reading or the anticipation. So I really want to focus on the reading component, okay? So facts, simple facts. The ball travels two ways, towards you and away from you. You meaning the athlete. Your visual priorities change in these two cases, okay? There are visual priorities and problems that occur in both situations. All right. An athlete needs to be able to shift their attention from knowing what to read. What do I read when the ball's coming toward me? What do I read when the ball's traveling away from me? Okay. So here's some issues. The ball's coming toward you, the athlete. Typically, problems are not reading the ball, or the infamous, I'm not watching the ball. Typically, it's due to visual wandering. Assuming your eyes are fine, as far as the ophthalmologist, it's probably visual wandering. We'll talk about that soon. You're reading the court and or the player. It's what I call you're scanning too early. So when the ball's coming toward you, you should be reading the ball rather than scanning, looking at where you want to hit it or looking at the opponent. Okay? The solution to this is what I call tracking and zooming in on the ball. So when the ball's coming toward you, you're looking at the ball and your contact. Reading the ball is the tracking. Okay, as you're getting ready to strike the ball, I call it the zoom. Okay, so we're going to talk about exercises on this. So you're on this side of the screen. Okay, the ball coming towards you. Flight one is from the time between when the opponent hits the ball to when it bounces on your side of the court, the ground target. Flight two is when it bounces and when it exits or when you're getting ready to strike the ball. So when the ball's coming towards you, yes, you're tracking the ball, but you're also zooming in on the ball, i.e. your contact, okay? Ball coming toward you, flight one and flight two, tracking exercises for flight one. Okay, bounce hit. Most athletes have done this. As the ball's coming towards you, you say bounce. As you hit it, you say hit. Tim Galloway suggested that. It's one drill and athletes know. Another one is a 1-2-3 hit drill. Okay. When rallying, call out the numbers as follows. One, as the opponent hits the ball. Two, as the ball crosses the net when it's coming toward you. Three, as the ball bounces on your side of the court. And as you strike the ball, you say hit. So saying hit is actually helping you exhale too. Instead of saying 1, 2, 3, 4, I found it helpful to say 1, 2, 3, and then hit. So the hit actually involves the exhalation. So this is actually helping the athlete track the incoming ball. All right. So here's an exercise here on the video. I don't know if you can hear this, but there's the athlete. As I hit the ball, it says one. As the ball crosses the net, two. As it bounces, three, and then hit. There's the exercise there. All right, now, the next level now, as the athlete gets better, that's just the basic 101, tracking the ball. Every ball, so Mehrban, imagine you, the athlete I'm working with. Every ball coming toward you has height, a different height, a different direction, a different depth, a different spin, and a different speed. So it's the five ball controls. Height could be high or low. So you and I could be hitting and say, okay, Mehrban, I want you to focus on the height right now. As my ball is crossing the net, let's say the net is 3 feet high, add another net there, 3 feet high. So anything above the imaginary net will be high. Anything through will be low. So the athlete's now focusing on reading the height of the ball. As the ball's coming toward them, they can either say high or low based on what they're predicting the ball's going to go over the net. Then it's direction. It could be right, middle, or left. As the ball's coming toward you, if you're focusing on direction, you may say right, middle, or left. So you're not tracking the incoming ball. Could be depth. Is it short? Is it mid? Is it deep? Anything, any ball landing inside your service box is short. Anything landing in three-quarter court is mid. Anything close to the baseline is deep. Then you got spin. I'm hitting a ball to you. Is it top spin? Is it underspin or is it side spin? And then the fifth one you could focus on is the speed. You send me a ball at 50 miles an hour. So I send the ball to you at 50 miles an hour. You send it back to me at 50. You've maintained. I send it to you at 25. Hmm. You send it to me at 30. You've increased. I send it to you at 25. You send it back to me at 15. You've decreased. So these are exercises athletes can do individually. Hey, today I want to focus on tracking the height of the ball. I want to focus on the direction. I want to focus on the depth, or the focus on the spin, or the focus. So those are exercises you can do to focus on tracking the incoming ball. And I've noticed a lot of problems that athletes misjudge the depth of the ball. That's the case. Focus on reading short, mid, or deep. So that's the tracking component. As you strike the ball now, you're making contact. Typically, if you take your eyes off the ball too early, you mishit the ball. If you take your eyes off the ball too late, you miss all the anticipative cues of what type of ball may be coming back from the opponent. So as you strike the ball, the zooming in is huge. You've got to time that right. So the solution for flight two, the zooming in, is you've got to, okay, so you want to take your eye off the ball and hopefully get it at the right time. So the zooming exercise is a towel drill, I'm going to show you, a dot drill, and a 1-1000 drill. So this is working on zooming in. Now the towel drill, a lot of times people move their head too much, okay? And if they move their head too much, they'll end up bouncing up and down while moving. The folded towel on the head while rallying will make sure you keep your head still during the entire time. So here's Gary right here, just doing a drill right now. He's keeping the towel on his head. And he's going to make sure when he hits the ball, the towel stays on his head. is really focusing on keeping the head still. That's the towel drill, that's an option. The dart drill. Purpose of this drill is to keep your head steady at contact. Place a dart on the court, and after impact, you're gonna keep looking at the dart. So here you have Gary right here, here's the dart. Once he hits the ball, instead of his eyes coming toward me, the opponent, he's gonna keep his head down on the dart. Let's see what it looks like. It's a little over-exaggerated to give him the feel of it. Right? Another option is when you strike the ball, count 1/1000, then look forward. So hopefully you're not taking your eyes off the ball too early.
1/1000.
It's a little exaggerated right there.
1/1000. 1/1000.
So those are exercises for the zooming in. So you've got reading the ball, tracking, flight one. When the ball bounces and you hit it, that's the zooming. We did these three drills right here. Now, ball traveling away from you. This is huge.
All right. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode with the Tennis Summit sessions, the previews of them for Paul Anacone, Louis Caye, and Faisal Hassan's sessions. And if you did, I would highly encourage you to go to tennisfilesummit.com. That's TennisFilesSummit.com to register to get your free ticket that enables you to watch all of the sessions for the week of April 22 to April 27. That's over 40 sessions, including the live streams. And then obviously, if you'd like to, you can pick up a lifetime access pass. So you can watch all the sessions and rewatch them whenever you want and don't have to worry about, you know, missing them for this week. You know, obviously, I know you all are busy, you know, whether that's work or tennis or anything else, family stuff. And, you know, there's going to be some sessions that are, you know, maybe you miss, but you really wanted to watch. So you can just, you know, get that lifetime access pass and then watch them whenever. But whichever one works for you, definitely want to see you at the summit. I particularly love the live streams because we get a lot of engagement. Obviously, you can ask questions, and we're analyzing, you know, videos of players and talking about strategy and mental game and all these things. So the interaction is particularly fun. But yeah, hope to see you there. And also just want to leave you the quote, as I do at every show's end. And this one is by George Lucas. And George said, "Always remember, your focus determines your reality." Very good quote there by George Lucas. And so with that, I hope to see you at Tennis Summit 2024. Just go to tennisfilesummit.com to register if you haven't already and join the many thousands of people who are going to be there online. And yeah, I'll see you there. And I'll see you on the next episode of the Tennis Files podcast. This is your host, Mehrban Aranchad, signing out.
Thanks for listening to the Tennis Files podcast. For more tips to help you improve your tennis game, visit tennisfiles.com.